Thanks, Andy.
On Friday lunchtime, I drove across to Guildford and had lunch with Joel. For those of you who don't know the family, Joel's our eldest son, and he works in Guildford near the hospital there. And I picked him up, and we went out for lunch. We had pizza together. And we were talking a little bit about what was going on in his church, and he was saying how the pastor there, I think, is a really great sort of get alongsider, and he shares quite a lot of things with Joel in terms of how you go about leading services and stuff like that. And one of the things he was saying to Joel was the importance of listening to what it is that God is saying in a service. And we've had quite a lot this morning already, haven't we? We've sung about God's love. We've had one of the best sermons that's been preached here already, right? So we've already had a really deep piece of teaching around God's love, about loving ourselves, about what God's love is capable, that heroic love that is unbreakable under the pressures that break other things. And the question is, what is God saying to us this morning? Do we go off in a different direction now? Or if the flavor's a bit different, how do we expect God to be pulling it all together for us so that the end of the service we have a rounded and a balanced understanding about God's love? And I'd just like us to spend a couple of seconds just thinking about what we've already had this morning, and then perhaps take things a stage further. I don't suppose we can have any music, can we, Dave? Is there any chance of just 30 seconds of sort of background music? Well, people just think about what it is that God, we can do the bits and pieces for the last thing. Yeah, something like that. Just have a minute or so just to think about what is God saying to us about love from the service so far this morning. Thanks very much. Now let's think a little bit about what is it that love your enemy adds to the ideas that we've already had this morning. What is it that God wants to say to us about loving our enemies? The passage that we have comes from Matthew chapter 5. It's part of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said, you've heard it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. And then Jesus says something that really, until I was sort of working on this passage, I'd never really understood how this bit fits in to what Jesus has just said. Because Jesus says, he causes, that's our Father in heaven, God, causes his Son to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And then Jesus goes on to say, if you just love those who love you, what do you do that other people don't do, that anybody can get up to? What is it that's special or different about being a Christian? And I think one of the leads I'd like us to sort of tuck away in the back of our mind is the fact that God's love is, in a sense, indiscriminate. That's one of the things that Jesus is saying. God's righteousness, God's sunshine shines on the good people and on the bad people. What is it? The sun it shineth on the right, on the good and on the righteous. The sun it shineth on the just and on the unjust fella, but chiefly on the unjust, because the unjust steals the just's umbrella. And so perhaps sometimes the unjust seem to get a little bit less rain in their lives than the just do. But on the whole, what Jesus is saying is, there's a sense of indiscriminateness about the love of God. God sends his love to those who are good and those who are bad. And we want to come back to that at the end of the story. Now, John's story, and I'd like us to go to John because there are two questions. First of all, how's I supposed to love my friends? And that's one of the themes that we've had this morning. We've thought a bit about loving ourselves. We think about loving God. We think about the fact that God is loving us. But how am I supposed to love my friends? And I think the problem is that if we can't love our friends, we can never love our enemies. I think sometimes we think that the loving our enemies is the thing we should really try for. And that's a little bit like trying to jump 3 meters before you've learned to jump 1.5 meters. And so often we sort of set ourselves the big challenge and then we fail at it, don't we? And we feel terrible about it. How am I supposed to love my friends? And then how am I supposed to love my enemies? And we're going to use one story, not a story from Matthew, but a story from John. And I think some of the story may allow us to pick up some of the threads. I was just skimming through to see whether I was enough on top of the passage to remember the bits that perhaps connect up to some of the other stuff, the unexpected stuff that's come up this morning. John tells us the story, and we're going to spend quite a bit of time on this story this morning, and it'll be a sort of maybe a slightly different sort of talk from what you were expecting. It's just before the Passover, says John. The Passover festival, Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. By the way, if you haven't got a Bible, it's probably worth trying to find one. This is on page 1081. If you wave your hands about, Ewan may do something friendly and bring you a Bible if you're downstairs, or Sharon on the other side maybe, if you'd like a Bible. If you're upstairs, I'm not sure where they are, but there are Bibles lying around upstairs. Page 1081 is the story that we're going to be spending time with. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. And so in the introduction to this chapter, John is telling us two things. First of all, he's telling us that the story he's about to tell us is going to be a story about love. There's going to be something about love in this passage. And then he also signals that he's going to tell us something about an enemy. And so the question, if I want to know how do I look after my friends and how is it I love my enemy, then this story should help me. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel round his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, you're going to wash my feet?" Jesus said to him, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who've had a bath need only wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said, "Not everyone was clean." When he'd finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is any messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. I'm not referring to all of you. I know those I've chosen, but this is to fulfill this passage of Scripture. He who shared my bread has turned against me. I'm telling you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe that I am who I am. Very truly, I tell you, whoever accepts anyone I send accepts me, and whoever accepts me accepts the one who sent me. After he'd said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, "Very truly, I tell you, one of you is going to betray me." His disciples stared at one another, at a loss to know which of them he meant. It's gone, hasn't it? Has the microphone gone? Pardon? Okay. His disciples stared at one another, at a loss to know which of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. Simon Peter motioned to this disciple and said, "Ask him what he means." Leaning back against Jesus, he said, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I've dipped it in the dish." Then, dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. Soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. So Jesus told him, "What you are about to do, do quickly." But no one at the meal understood why Jesus said this to him. Since Judas had charge of the money, some thought Jesus was telling him to buy what was needed for the festival or to give something to the poor. This next verse is one of the most brilliant verses in John. As soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out, and it was night. So we have a story here about something that Jesus did, where he washes his disciples' feet. And at the end of that passage, he says, "Do you know what I've done?" He said, "I'm your Lord and your Master." He said, "That's what you call me, and that's the thing that you should call me. That's correct." But he said, "I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you." Now, what is it that Jesus has done for his disciples in washing their feet? Clearly, for some of them, it's a difficult experience. Peter finds it massively difficult. The washing of the feet was something, it needed to be done a lot because people walked in bare feet with sandals. They walked through very dusty roads, and if you came in for a meal or something like that, one of the first things your host would do was to get your feet washed, usually by a servant in the house. It was something that the servants did most of the time, although if you read in 1 Timothy, you'll also work out that the mums in the family would often wash the feet of visitors who came in. That was the culture. That was who did the foot washing. And of course, they're looking after themselves at this particular meal, and there isn't a servant there. There's nobody to do that. So who's going to do it? And that's a bit embarrassing because, well, you can ignore it for a while until Jesus makes it unignorable. I don't know whether you've had that kind of edgy experience. About this time 10 years ago, I went to a conference in South Africa, in Pretoria. And it was an interesting conference. There were not many people from the UK there. I was doing a panel session with three other, academic women that I knew, who had all got some association with Brunel, and we did a panel. But most of the other people there were a few more Europeans, there were some Dutch people, a lot of Africans from all over the place. And for me, it was an interesting experience in many ways. I went to the Voortrekker Monument, which was one of the great Africana places, and I also managed to get to Soweto to see some of the thinking there, some of the history. I saw the Black Madonna and various other bits and pieces in the churches there, and it was just a fabulous experience all around. But the thing I suppose I still remember with that sort of clutching feeling in my chest was we were just about to go off, just jump in the van and go off to the conference, and I looked down and I saw that one of my shoelaces was untied. And when I've actually got my legs on, I can't tie my shoelaces. I have to tie them before I put my legs on. That's the way it goes. And you're supposed to tell experiences that everybody can identify with if you're telling stories. And I appreciate that none of you can identify with this story. So you just have to take my word for it, that seeing that your lace is untied is a bit of a pain when you look down and you know that it's going to be like that for the whole of the day. So I said to one of the women who was standing nearby, who was on the panel, I said, would you just tie my shoelace for me, please? And she knew me quite well, and she said, well, so long as nobody photographs me kneeling at your feet, Terry, I will tie your shoelace. And then something very edgy happened. There was a black guard standing there, and he said, I'll tie your shoelace. And that was one of the most uncomfortable shoelace tying sessions that I'd ever had. A black guard tying the shoe of a white professor in post-apartheid Pretoria. And I still remember the feeling of that tying of the shoelace 10 years later. I'll probably remember it until the day I die. And there's something deeply subversive about what Jesus has done, isn't there? There is something that it didn't sort of fit with it. That some of the disciples feel really uncomfortable about what has just happened. And the question is Jesus asking us to do things that are deeply uncomfortable? And I think the answer is yes, but that's not all that he's saying. This isn't saying this is something that the young ones have to do for the old ones. I thought it was quite interesting when we sung that psalm, or when we read that psalm, you know, Andy had divided us up into different groups, those above and those below, the men, the women, the adults, the children. But it isn't that kind of a thing that Jesus is saying. He's not saying this is something that one group has to learn to do for another group. There will be times when doing that is important, but I don't think that that's at the heart of what Jesus is saying. Because having your feet washed was something that everybody needed to have done all the time. And I spent quite a lot of time the week before I was in China a week or so ago, and I wasn't sleeping very well overnight. It was great because when I came back, I just slotted back into this time zone. But while I was out there, I wasn't sleeping, and I was sort of waking up just before midnight and sort of being lying awake for maybe 3 or 4 hours. And so I put most of this talk together in one of those nights when I wasn't sleeping very well. And I was thinking, what is it that is the equivalent, the modern equivalent, to washing somebody's feet? And I don't think that there is an exact modern equivalent. And I think it's just as well, because if there were, we'd all do that and we'd all miss the point of what Jesus was telling us about. We'd sort of ritualize it and we'd turn it into something, we'd probably even put it into the church business meeting, that we had to have this whatever it was that was the equivalent of washing feet. And we'd turn it into some kind of routine. And Jesus has stopped us from doing that because that doesn't exist as a need anymore. We all have showers, we all wear socks, most of us wear socks, we have shoes, we have all kinds of ways in which we can manage our feet. What is it that Jesus is saying? Well, I think what he's saying is there will be things that you will do for one another because you are friends of mine. There are things that you will do, and I'm not going to write them all down, says Jesus, but they're going to be the foot washing things. The things that sometimes will be awkward, sometimes they just need to be done, sometimes they'll take up your time, but they will be done for other Christians because other Christians need them done. That, says Jesus, is the most important thing. And if we just flick over to page 1082, which is what I was looking for as Jo was finishing off her talk, one of the things that Jesus says in verse 34 of John 13 is, a new commandment I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And what Jesus is talking about amongst his disciples is not necessarily that heroic love. There will be times when it takes, when you have to be heroic in order to wash somebody's feet. But a lot of times it will be the mundane and the ordinary things in life when we support each other. And I know a lot of that happens in this church. If you're unfortunate enough to find yourself really quite ill for a period, you will find that there is a system, there is a rota of people who will cook you a meal and will get that meal to you. There are many ways in which this church operates to try and be the sort of loving community that Jesus has talked about. By this, says Jesus, that will all people know that you love me. They will see those acts, those very common acts, those very subtle and perhaps ordinary acts repeated over and over again, and they will say, this is a group of people that really love one another. They know how to look after one another's feet. And you say, well, Terry, that's great, but that isn't the text you were given. I was talking to John last week, and the week before, and John was saying that this is the first time he sort of put a series like this together. And he said, the scary thing is, he said, you give these people titles, and then they go and do things with them that you hadn't expected them to do at all with the titles. And you have no control, really, as to what's going on. Are you feeling okay there, John, at the moment? I haven't forgotten what the title is. And the thing that we're supposed to be looking at is, what about my enemy? How am I supposed to love my enemy? And in Matthew, Jesus said, well, you should pray for your enemy. And that's quite a private thing to do. It doesn't take that much necessarily. It can take quite a lot to actually pray that God will genuinely give your enemy a good break in life, particularly if you think your enemy is getting their break in life because of what they've done to you. Nonetheless, it can be quite difficult to really pray that God will make things work for your enemy. What is it that Jesus says we should do for our enemy? What's the thing for our enemy that we should be doing? And we've talked at the moment about what we should do for our friends, and this is the introduction. This talk has got a very long introduction and a very short main body to the talk. Jesus says, when it comes to your friends, you should love your friends by showing them a very practical form of love. And the main body of this text is actually only a few words long. The main body of what we have to take away from this bit of the service is only a few words long. And as I was thinking about it, I was reminded of a story, and I Googled it, and it's attributed to Ernest Hemingway. And the story is that he was out for lunch, and his friends bet him that he couldn't write a complete story in 6 words. And Ernest Hemingway, he took their money by writing this story. For sale, baby shoes never worn. And it's a brilliant story because it's not one story. It's a different story for each person who reads it. For some, it's a tragic story. It's a story of a baby who wasn't. And it's hard to read that first time without that deep emotive punch that there's something really awkward going on here. Perhaps for others, it's a story about a baby that didn't have any legs. And maybe that's a different sort of story for them. For other people, it may be a story of triumph for somebody who started out without feet and ends up walking around. I don't know what the story was. It's a different story for every person, but it's the same 6 words. And the main part of our message this morning is only 6 words long. It's not as good as Ernest Hemingway did. Wash his or her feet too. Jesus has Judas with him throughout that first bit of the meal. Don't understand things fully. If you want to understand Passover Seder's a little bit more, have a word with John and Jennifer, and maybe they'll invite you to one of the ones that they do every year in their house. From what I can understand, Jesus could only have given it to Judas if he had had the place of honor sitting next to him. And so Jesus treats Judas just like, perhaps even honoring him a little bit more highly than the others at that meal. Until there comes a point when Judas decides to leave. And in John's immortal words, it was night. And for Judas, it is night. So Jesus washes Judas' feet just as he washes Peter's feet. And I think that this sermon, if it's going to say anything to us, is it saying something about the practicality of Christian love, something about the need to love one another in very practical ways, in ways that only you will really know about. And you may say, well, actually, I don't know about any of those needs. Well, if you want an edgy week, just pray a very simple prayer and ask God to make you aware of one or two needs, one or two people's feet that you can wash this week. And he will, okay? And you may learn never to pray that prayer again. I don't know, because the thing about God is that he answers our prayers. And sometimes we'd like them answered in particular ways, and he answers them in very different ways. But the main message here is that we should wash one another's feet, and when it comes to our enemy, we should wash their feet too. And that may mean putting up with a difficult boss. It may mean staying late to do something for people that you don't like. It may mean all kinds of things. I don't know. Those six words are my words, but the story is your story. You have to give it life, and you have to live it out this week. Thanks very much indeed.